Well, 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 sneers Snape, taking out his wand and tapping the padlock once so that the chains snaked backward and the gates creaked open. Nice of you to turn up, Potter, although you have evidently decided that the wearing of school robes would detract from your appearance. I couldn't change. I didn't have my... Harry began, but Snape cut across him. There is no need to wait, Nymphadora. Potter is quite, safe in my hands.
I meant Hagrid to get the message, said Tonks, frowning.
Hagrid was late for the start of term feast, just like Potter here, so I took it instead. And incidentally, said Snape, standing back to allow Harry to pass him, I was interested to see your new Patronus.
He shut the gates in her face with a loud clang and tapped the chains with his wand again so that they slithered, clinking, back into place.
I think you were better off with the old one, said Snape, the malice in his voice unmistakable. The new one looks weak.
As Snape swung the lantern about, Harry saw fleetingly a look of shock and anger on Tonks's face. Then she was covered in darkness once more.
Good night,
Harry called to her over his shoulder as he began the walk up to the school with Snape.
Thanks for everything.
See you, Harry.
Snape did not speak for a minute or so. Harry felt as though his body was generating waves of hatred so powerful that it seemed incredible that Snape could not feel them burning him. He had loathed Snape from their first encounter, but Snape had placed himself forever and irrevocably beyond the possibility of Harry's forgiveness by his attitude towards Sirius. Whatever Dumbledore said, Harry had had time to think over the summer and had concluded that Snape's snide remarks to Sirius about remaining safely hidden while the rest of the Order of the Phoenix were off fighting Voldemort had probably been a powerful factor in Sirius rushing off to the Ministry the night that he had died. Harry clung to this notion because it enabled him to blame Snape, which felt satisfying, and also because he knew that if anyone was not sorry that Sirius was dead, it was the man now striding next to him in the darkness.
50 points from Gryffindor for lateness, I think, said Snape. And, let me see, another 20 for your muggle attire. You know, I don't believe any house has ever been in negative figures this early in the term. We haven't even started pudding. You might have set a record, Potter.
The fury and hatred bubbling inside Harry seemed to blaze white hot, but he would rather have been immobilized all the way back to London than tell Snape why he was late.
I suppose you wanted to make an entrance, did you? Snape continued. And with no flying car available, you decided that bursting into the Great Hall halfway through the feast ought to create a dramatic effect.
Still, Harry remained silent. Though he thought his chest might explode, he knew that Snape had come to fetch him for this, for the few minutes when he could needle and torment Harry without anyone else listening. They reached the castle steps at last, and as the great oaken front doors swung open into the vast flagged entrance hall, a burst of talk and laughter and of tinkling plates and glasses greeted them through the doors standing open into the great hall. Harry wondered whether he could slip his invisibility cloak back on, thereby gaining his seat at the long Gryffindor table, which, inconveniently, was the farthest from the entrance hall, without being noticed. As though he had read Harry's mind, however, Snape said,
No cloak. You can walk in so that everyone sees you, which is what you wanted, I'm sure.
Harry turned on the spot and marched straight through the open doors, anything to get away from Snape. The great hall, with its four longhouse tables and its staff tables set at the top of the room, was decorated as usual with floating candles that made the plates below glitter and glow. It was all a shimmering blur to Harry, however, who walked so fast that he was passing the Hufflepuff table before people really started to stare. And by the time they were standing up to get a good look at him, he had spotted Ron and Hermione, sped along the benches toward them, and forced his way in between them.
Where have you... Blimey! What have you done to your face? said Ron, goggling at him along with everyone else in the vicinity.
Why, what's wrong with it? Said Harry, grabbing a spoon and squinting at his distorted reflection.
You're covered in blood, said Hermione. Come here.
She raised her wand, said, Turgio, and siphoned off the dried blood.
Thanks, said Harry, feeling his now clean face. How's my nose looking?
Normal, said Hermione anxiously. Why shouldn't it?
Harry, what happened? We've been terrified.
I'll tell you later, said Harry curtly. He was very conscious that Ginny, Neville, Dean, and Seamus were listening in. Even nearly headless Nick, the Gryffindor ghost, had come floating along the bench to eavesdrop.
But, said Hermione. Not now, Hermione, said Harry in a darkly significant voice.
He hoped very much that they would all assume he had been involved in something heroic, preferably involving a couple of Death Eaters and a Dementor. Of course, Malfoy would spread the story as far and wide as he could, but there was always a chance it wouldn't reach too many Gryffindor ears. He reached across Ron for a couple of chicken legs and a handful of chips, but before he could take them, they vanished, to be replaced with puddings.
You missed the sorting anyway,
said Hermione, as Ron dived for a large chocolate gâteau.
Hat say anything interesting? Asked Harry, taking a piece of treacle tart. More of the same, really. Advising us all to unite in the face of our enemies, you know.
Dumbledore mentioned Voldemort at all?
Not yet, but he always saves his proper speech for after the feast, doesn't he? It can't be long now.
Snape said Hagrid was late for the feast.
You've seen Snape? How come? Said Ron between frenzied mouthfuls of gâteau.
Bumped into him, said Harry evasively.
Hagrid was only a few minutes late, said Hermione. Look, he's waving at you, Harry.
Harry looked up at the staff table and grinned at Hagrid, who was indeed waving at him. Hagrid had never quite managed to comport himself with the dignity of Professor McGonagall, head of Gryffindor House, the top of whose head came up to somewhere between Hagrid's elbow and shoulder as they were sitting side by side, and who was looking disapprovingly at this enthusiastic greeting. Harry was surprised to see the divination teacher, Professor Trelawney, sitting on Hagrid's other side. She rarely left her tower room, and he had never seen her at the start of term feast before. She looked as odd as ever, glittering with beads and trailing shawls, her eyes magnified to enormous size by her spectacles. Having always considered her a bit of a fraud, Harry had been shocked to discover at the end of the previous term that it had been she who had made the prediction that caused Lord Voldemort to kill Harry's parents and attack Harry himself. The knowledge had made him even less eager to find himself in her company, but thankfully this year he would be dropping divination. Her great beacon-like eyes swiveled in his direction. He hastily looked away toward the Slytherin table. Draco Malfoy was miming the shattering of a nose to raucous laughter and applause. Harry dropped his gaze to his treacle tart, his insides burning again. What he would not give to fight Malfoy one-on-one!